Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Wednesday afternoon with Tim Band McMahon.
Howdy, partner.
In Dallas, who's got his microphone working again after a week down.
Now I'm just trying to figure out all my passwords since I've got a new a little loaner laptop here. So that's a difficult process.
All right. Well, I can't help you there. We could guess your passwords, but you know, this is part of the Disney family.
Stop.
Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, is Tim Bontemps, who I'm sure has interesting passwords that all revolve around St. Bonaventure.
I will not confirm or deny that.
So the NBA has decided, they haven't officially announced it, but it's going to happen. Woj reported yesterday, and I can just tell you from talking to other folks, it's, you know, Woj reports something, it's you know, you can pretty much take it to the bank, but I can tell you that you can take it to the bank. The NBA is going to have an all-star game in Atlanta in early March. I think it's March 7th off the top of my head. I know that there's some people who are reacting, thinking that this is a bad idea because it's a possible super spreader event, et cetera. You bring people from, you know, 14, 15 teams, 18 teams together, and then, you know, you send them out. Look, let's just call it what it is. This is the NBA trying to salvage something. It's about money at its heart. There is going to be a charity and a goodwill aspect to it. And I don't begrudge the NBA for doing that and respect that, but let's just be honest. It is what it is. They're trying to save this event and have a TV product and rescue it. And Bontemps, did they say anything about whether they're going to do the rally scoring or the,
I don't think they have not said what they're going to do with the Elam ending or any of that kind of stuff yet, or even if they're going to do captains like they have in the past. They've just
It's going to be East versus West. It sounds like East versus West is what they said. So I haven't heard one thing about the Elam ending. But look, it's going to be a 5-day All-Star break, and those guys are going to be there testing every single day. If there's going to be an outbreak, it could just as likely happen from the guys who are going to go on vacation. Right, McMahon? I mean, I'm not going to, like, it is what it is. I'm not going to do pearl clutching on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I would say guys spreading out to various beaches is at least as dangerous. Various beaches or Vegas or whatever is at least as dangerous as guys going to play a glorified pickup game.
Yeah. I mean, we did take a step in the right direction last year in terms of the All-Star weekend. I thought the game was terrific. The Elam ending was one of my favorite moments of basketball the last year. I don't think we're going to see that level of basketball, but I'm not going to make any assumption. Let's just move on from that. So I thought we'd maybe take a look at who we think the All-Stars are going to be. So the first All-Star voting actually started last week. You can vote on Twitter and other places. I don't know. Google it. I don't know where you vote. I never believe those totals anyway.
We got some conspiracy theories.
No, I mean, I just...
Stop the steal.
I am an All-Star voter. I am on the media panel. So I will make my vote. The sort of that keeps Zaza Pachulia and the like out of the starting lineup.
Hater.
So Bontemps, I think you took a look at this, and I want to start in the Western Conference. So the first returns will be released on Thursday, which is our tomorrow, your today, if you listen to this pod the day it comes out. So we'll have a good idea. There's been some big names that have changed conferences, specifically James Harden, that will sort of shake stuff up a little bit. So the starters will be determined by the voting, partially fans, partially players, partially media, and then the reserves by obviously the coaches. I don't know if I want to get into the starters or not. I thought maybe we'd just pick the teams, because the starting is somewhat interesting, but I think we'll pick the teams unless you guys have a problem with that.
It's your podcast, it's fine. Dude.
Yeah, your pod, boss.
The podcast is called The Hoop Collective, of which you guys are part of the
Brian collective. Windhorst.
No, I was checking out a press release today, which was about the massive growth of ESPN podcast. We made the press release. It was Brian Windhorst and The Hoop Collective, though.
Which is You, McMahon, you are the leading collector in the Hoop Collective.
I'm a collector. That's for sure.
All right. So Bontemps, let's start with, what do you want to start with? The guard? How do you have this classified?
So, well, as a fellow voter, I have the starters and reserves that I think, I have the starters and then the sixth in the West, guys that I think were locks.
So we're going to do the starters. We'll do the starters. Okay.
Yeah. So we'll just do the, I have 10 guys that I think are locks to make the team. So my ballot is going to be
13 guys make the team, 12 guys or 13 guys. Remember last year they added 13 so that Wade and Nowitzki could make it. Or was that 2 years ago?
No, that was 2 years ago. I'm pretty sure it's 12 guys. It should be
13. All right.
There's the starters and reserves are both two backcourts and three front courts. And then there's two wildcard spots. So that's what the team is. So my starters would be Dame Lillard and Steph Curry. And my backcourt and my front court would be Kawhi, LeBron, and Jokic. And then the five reserves that I think are locks to make the team are Rudy Gobert, Devin Booker, Anthony Davis, Paul George, and Luka Doncic. So that's 10 guys that I think are locks to make the team.
Yes, but there are 12 that make the team.
And there's 12. So that then leaves a bunch of guys, I think, for the final two spots. I went through and looked at the teams. The guys I came up with were Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley from Utah, Chris Paul, Ja Morant, CJ McCollum, Christian Wood, DeMar DeRozan, De'Aaron Fox, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and then you could probably argue for the two guys in New Orleans, Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. I think they've been bad enough that they won't be in the mix. But
let me ask you this. He doesn't have Luka in this as a starter.
Whatever. He will be. I mean, he will be just because you know that's going to be the way the vote goes down, and he's got the numbers.
So who do you think the vote will go to? Because you think who gets bumped, Lillard or Curry?
That's a great question. I think Lillard probably gets bumped from the starters, and I'm not talking. We can discuss the merit of that if you want, but Steph's going to get the votes. Luke is going to get
any two of those. Any two of those guys are worthy starters, and all three of them are going to make the team. So
right.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean Lillard has been. He's had a great year, and he's also been cooking since McCollum went down.
I mean, there's no question. Like you said, those guys are all absolute no brainer.
The tiebreaker for me was the Mavs have been a mess. So
they are, they have been.
I just had Luka third, but just because you had to choose between them, I mean, he's going to make the team for sure. The interesting part to me is who gets those final two spots, because I don't really think there's much of an argument for those 10 guys.
All right, so
now go through your five reserve locks again.
Booker, Gobert, Davis, George, and Luka.
Can't argue any of those.
Yeah, so you mentioned, would this be Jokic's first starting? Is Jokic going to be popular enough to get a starting nod?
He may not start either, but like if Anthony Davis starts instead, I'm not worried about that. Like that was just how my ballot.
So the way the voting goes is it's two guards and two front court players. For years, they force you to pick a center. And so there were years where there were some weird things that went on, namely like Zaza Pachulia almost getting named as a starter. But there were years where there was a starting center who was a borderline all-star because somebody had to vote for center. Not every year, but it did happen once or twice. You know, Jokic just got named player of the month, which, you know, is interesting for several reasons. And I want to talk about Jokic with a trivia question here. And this segment is brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car. Love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee. So yesterday, our Tuesday, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic were named East and Western Conference Players of the Month. First time this stat was out there pretty prevalently, and I will give it to you. And then I want to ask you gentlemen this next trivia question. Embiid and Jokic were the first pair of centers to be named Player of the Month in each conference since Dwight Howard and Yao Ming in 2006, 15 years since two centers were named Players of the Month. That stat was out there a lot. I saw it in several places. Now, who was the last Denver Nugget
to be Player of the Month? Player of the Month. And so I'm assuming, by the way you're asking it, that it wasn't the first name that comes to mind, which obviously would be Melo.
It is Melo.
It is. Well, hell, that wasn't hard.
I didn't say it was that hard, but it's been 12 years since 2009.
No, that was easy, just like it is when you shop for a car at CarMax.
God bless
corporate
you.
Synergy.
We didn't Bontemps didn't even have to guess.
That's right.
You know, I want to be able to give you, last week I asked about this, the trivia.
Yeah, Scott Wedman. Some crap.
Yeah. Andrew Hahn was on me about that question. Okay. I just wanted to illustrate how unusual and strange it was that LeBron was 15-1 against the Cavs. Jokic, Bontemps earlier this week declared that Jokic and Embiid were clearly the number one and number two MVP candidates, which caused
I'm pretty sure I said arguably, not clearly.
All right, I apologize.
Those two guys and LeBron, I would say, are pretty.
Well, I'm just saying the LeBron crowd did not like that.
He's got a rep for being a big time LeBron hater ever since he gave Kawhi the crown as king of the league. Just saying. Oh yeah, no, it was right. It was on this podcast last year during the playoffs.
As I said at the time, I was waiting for him to lose, and then he had one of the worst collapses in NBA history. So then LeBron won the title. So LeBron retook the crown, as he has often done over his career.
And let me tell you, those Jazz, their reign atop the Bontemps power rankings didn't last too long either. Might want to.
Oh no, they were still back up. They're still number one this
week.
Well,
that was tough because you did have to vote. Full disclosure, our votes are due Sunday afternoon, so you didn't get the privilege of watching them get their buttocks handed to them by the old Nuggets.
Well, they lost by 10 to a Nuggets team that literally had like one of the greatest shooting performances in the history of the league. So it took that for the streak to end. So I felt okay leaving them number one.
Well, the Lakers had a really nice win in Boston, but they also had a loss in Detroit since they were at the top of your rankings there, man. So. I think both of you can claim victory and suffer some level of defeat.
Well, sure. Sure.
That would be the first victory Bontemps has been able to claim in quite some time.
as an example of why you've got to be really careful betting on the NBA, Sunday, that was an afternoon game in Denver. And I'm not sure why, but Michael Singer, who's the beat writer for the Denver Post, for some reason, the Denver Nuggets daily schedule for their players was up on the Jumbotron scoreboard, whatever they call the giant scoreboard, when he walked in before the game. And it indicated that the Nuggets were expected to report to the Ball Arena at 6 a.m. for their COVID testing, their pregame COVID testing. Hmm. And I was like, 6 a.m.?
Yeah.
For, I think it was a 1 o'clock Eastern or 1 o'clock Mountain
one
start.
O'clock, 1 o'clock Mountain time start. Yep. And then they hit their first 9,000 threes in a row.
So I was like, so I even looked it up. I was like, well, what is the line in this freaking game? They're playing the Jazz. The Jazz have won 10 in a row. Mitchell's back and healthy. And I looked at it and it was Jazz minus 2.5. And I was like, oh. The Nuggets are up at 4 a.m. and the Jazz, you know, only 2.5. And then the Nuggets made 16 of their first 20 shots. I did not wager on the game. I'm just saying I certainly looked at what the line was. Uh-huh.
Well, good thing you didn't put any of your hard-earned money down. You'd have had to write a couple more books.
All right. So there doesn't seem to be a lot of disagreement. So where are you at on Mike Conley?
Listen, Conley, I believe, is still leading the league in overall plus minus. Here's the thing, though. And he's, you know, for a long time, he kind of had the crown as the best player who'd never been an all-star. If the Jazz are getting two, are you really giving it to Conley over Mitchell?
Good question. And also, if you have to make a choice between, if you're the coaches and you're choosing between Chris Paul and Mike Conley, because Chris Paul's on your bubble too, Bontemps?
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably picking one or the other.
Yeah, Conley's right. Still leading the league in plus minus, and it's by 31 points. I mean, it's not even close. But I think it's really difficult to make the argument that, and the Jazz aren't getting three, let's be honest.
I don't think so.
And if you know, Gobert and Mitchell are the pillars of that franchise, and Conley's having another, he's having a great year. He's having a great year. I don't think I can make a convincing enough case to have him make the cut for the Western Conference All-Stars.
And has Ja missed too much time?
Yeah, I think he has at this point. I mean, if he keeps playing this way and Memphis stays in the middle of the playoff picture, I think he'll have a shot. I mean, to me, this comes down to five guys. The two Utah guys, Chris Paul, DeMar DeRozan and De'Aaron Fox.
I think if the Rockets keep winning, I think you have to put Christian Wood.
Oh, that's right.
I think you got to put Christian Wood in that conversation.
Wood definitely deserves to be in the mix given the way Houston's playing right now, for sure. No question. He's going to get some votes. I don't think he'll get in because I think Chris Paul will get in. Like you said, Brian, I think there'll be enough respect for him, especially considering the coaches are voting for this. Given the way Phoenix is playing and the jump they made from last year, I think he'll get in. And then, you know, we'll see what I think Mitchell and Paul are probably the most likely ones to make it. Though I would probably personally say Conley should make it over Mitchell just based off how he's played.
And what about CJ? He was
incredible. CJ would have made it, but he's going to miss the past six weeks. It really stinks because he's another guy like Conley, who's been a really good player for a long time, hasn't made the All-Star team and was having an unbelievable season. I mean, I think he would have been a lock if he was healthy, but I just don't think he's played enough games that he's going to be able to get in.
All right. So you also mentioned Shai Gilgeous-Alexander putting up good numbers. Their team is overachieving, but still not really good enough. And, you know, Brandon Ingram, you didn't mention Zion. Zion's putting up big offensive numbers, but defensively, you know, they've been a disappointment. So.
Zion has been a complete disaster defensively. So, I mean,
yeah, he's putting up crazy offensive numbers. I just don't, you know, I think they're underachieving. So I think it's going to be harder to put either of them. And especially, this is the thing with Ja, too, to make your first All-Star team, you kind of got to hit it out of the park, especially if you're a coach's pick. You kind of really got to hit it out of the park. And it's not that it's Ja's fault that he was hurt, but, you know, your case has to be very strong, typically. Typically, your case has to be very strong.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's still 3 weeks until the reserves voting. So if Memphis continues to be above 500 and Jockey's playing great and stays healthy, then he might have a shot to break in by then. But at this point, he's only played a handful of games. I don't think it's enough.
The other thing is, so you mentioned DeMar DeRozan. You know, that's a guy who's highly respected in the league. And again, if they're trying to break a tie, if the players are, or if the coaches are trying to break a tie, I think he may get.
I think he's going to get some real consideration. The Spurs have been really good. They've been fun to watch, and DeMar is playing great. I mean, he's averaging 6 or 7 assists a game. He's not shooting threes. He's not shooting three still, but I mean, he's basically become a point forward for them. I mean, he's played really, really well.
West is so tightly packed. San Antonio was in fourth place on Saturday. They lost on Sunday, and they dropped to 11th. I mean, it's just like, and it's hard to know. You know, if they're in fourth place, you think they should have an All-Star. But, you know, the way it's packed, I don't know if it's going to go that way. And then they lost by 30 to the Grizzlies like 2 days later. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. All right, Eastern Conference, Bontemps. Now,
this one.
Let me just say, these voting results will be interesting because I think there's a good chance that the Nets could have three guys voted in.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is where the voting stuff gets a little tricky. But I think that my starters for my ballot, at least for now, are James Harden and Jaylen Brown in the backcourt, and then Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Kevin Durant in the front court. And then I had 6 locks for reserves: Trae Young, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, Bam Adebayo, Chris Middleton, and Domantas Sabonis.
Okay, so you do not have Kyrie on there.
I do not, because at this point he missed a chunk of games, and I think he's still a possibility. Now, again, to your point, he could get voted in as a starter. And also to your point, here are the then like dozen guys that I had for the one remaining spot: Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris from Philly, Kyrie, Malcolm Brogdon from Indiana, Colin Sexton and Andre Drummond from Cleveland, Gordon Hayward, Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, Zach LaVine, Nick Vucevic, and Julius Randle. Now, well, those guys at the end aren't necessarily in the mix, but you've got 11 or 12 guys who are having good seasons to basically get one spot.
Boy, there's going to be a long list of people who feel like they got snubbed.
Well, and honestly, you can't say Bam is a lock and Kyrie's not. Kyrie, I mean, Bam missed time too. The Heat are way under 500.
Well, part of that, Tim, is that I think you have to have three forwards, and I think Bam is going to be one of the three forwards that the coaches pick too.
Okay, realistically though, Kyrie is averaging 28 freaking points per game. I mean, efficiently as hell.
He's been great.
His shooting splits are 53.5, 44.7, 94.8. Like,
well, and this is kind of my point. You could argue the East All-Star roster is set.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't argue with that. Like, I think if Kyrie stays healthy, I think those three guys are going to make it. I think those other guys are all pretty well locked in, and barring an injury, there's your 12 All-Stars. Like, I don't think any of those other guys are going to be able to get in there. And like you mentioned, Brian, that people are going to be upset. I mean, one guy I'm curious to see how this goes for is Zach LaVine in Chicago. You know, he's averaging 28 points a game. He was upset last year. He didn't make the All-Star team. That team is under 500 again. And, you know, if he doesn't make the All-Star team again, the team's already, you know, there's already been a lot of noise there that he's, you know, they've been doing campaign stuff for Zach to make the All-Star team. That's a kind of situation where I don't think he's really got much of a shot, given the
when you lay it out like you just did. I don't think he's anywhere close, and he's even getting a sort of a. I mean, Jimmy Butler, I think, plays forward for them, but somehow last year he was deemed a guard. Jimmy Butler isn't going to make it. I don't think, because he's missed so much time.
Yeah, I didn't even include Jimmy just because of the amount of games he's missed. I
guess he could be great over the next 3 weeks, but my guess is Jimmy's not going to make it. So he's even getting a sort of a bonus when there's a genuine all-star who's just going to be out.
He's got a rep as an empty calories number stuffer. I mean, the numbers are ridiculous. He's 27-5-5, 50-40, damn near 90. But, you know, they're not a good team. And if you want to talk about plus-minus, his plus-minus, if you stack that up against any of these other guys in the conversation, is – it's awful.
I do think
no question.
I do think he's not the same player as he was a couple of years ago. I do think he's I think he's a more contributing player, but I agree. I just think the circumstances are going to go against him.
To be clear, I'm not arguing he should make it over these guys, but what I'm curious to see is the reaction to not making it over these guys, because he was already mad he didn't make it last year. Yeah. If he doesn't make it again, and this team isn't very good, you know, it's going to be about a month before the trade deadline. I'll just be curious to see what the reaction to that is, especially in a trade market where, you know, the general consensus from people I talk to is that Bradley Beal is not going to be traded. So if you assume that to be the case, there's not a lot of interesting names that are necessarily going to be available. And Zach is a guy who, you know, if he became available, could be an interesting name.
Well, on this podcast a couple weeks ago, we did early or small sample size theater, and we talked about how Trae Young was struggling. And I think Kevin Pelton basically presented the case that he would rebound. He's averaging 38 in his last five games. 2-3 weeks ago, I wouldn't have put Trae in the lock category. Do you agree with that, McMahon, that Trae's in the lock category now? I mean, he's been,
yeah, with him winning, with the numbers that he's putting up. I think he should be a lock.
It's averaging 27-9 on a playoff team in the East. Yeah.
Kyrie's averaging 28.
That was, to be clear, the only reason Kyrie wasn't a lock, and McMahon made a fair counter about Bam, the only reason Kyrie wasn't a lock was because he missed a good chunk of games. Like, if Kyrie stays healthy, he's going to make the All-Star team.
And what's the biggest knock on Trae Young? Okay, bad defensive player. Really, really bad defensive player. Listen, look at these on-off numbers with Zach LaVine right now. When he's on the floor, the Bulls give up 116.9 points per 100 possessions, which is horrific. When he's off the floor, and again, fairly small sample size, but when he's off the floor, it's 99.1, which would be by far the best defense in the league.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and you can argue, like, I, you know, to be clear, like I said, I just thought it was an interesting discussion given off what's happened with him. But I would argue that, you know, Colin Sexton's been better than him. I'd argue Gordon Hayward's been better than him.
Then Levine, you know, I think, or
yes, then Levine. Okay, yeah, no, then no. I'm just saying to these guys who aren't going to make it, Malcolm Brogdon has been really good, right? Like, these guys have all been, and all their teams are better. Like, I, yeah, so I wasn't saying, to be clear, I wasn't saying that he, like, should make it, but just, you know, based off what has happened there, it's just a guy that I'll be curious to see what his reaction is. If he doesn't make it, like, I think we assume that he won't.
Yeah. And, so, and you know, with Trae Young, look, nobody's saying that he's going to be an all defensive candidate anytime soon, but the Hawks are playing at least somewhat decent defense at this point. They're matter of fact, they're ranked ninth in the league. So you can't.
And Trey's gotten a little better too.
Yeah,
like obviously he's not a stopper or by any means, but he definitely isn't as bad as.
And they've put some pieces better around him that really work. I mean, Capella has been a big addition for them that fits really well with him. So my point is, you can't use that as some huge knock on Trey. Oh, he's the worst defensive player in the world when they're a top 10 defense.
The worst defensive team in the league is the Kings, but like, the Nets are right there in my view, and they're going to have three guys from their starting lineup make it.
Yeah, they're right there with the best offense in NBA history is the difference.
Right, that's true. The Blazers are the second worst defensive team in the league, and we're slamming Dame Lillard right in there right as a lock. So, you know, the defense is only used as an excuse to, you know, if it needs to be. It's not always paid that close attention to when it comes to this kind of stuff. Colin Sexton is an interesting name. Again, I think as good as he's been, the challenge is going to be you have to be dominant to make your first team. It has to be sort of clear. And the Cavs, I believe, have the hardest schedule between now and the All-Star break. Now, doesn't mean they have the hardest schedule between now and when the reserves are picked, but it could be, you know, or he could rise above. He could have a bunch more games and make it harder. But I think he's a guy to watch going forward. You know, he's certainly playing like an all-star for the Cavs. He's made a difference maker for them. But we'll see if the Cavs are hanging at 500 right now. Their schedule is brutal going forward. So at least for this next rest of this month. So we'll see how that goes.
Just to fact check myself, since I said that Trey has been better defensively, and the on-off numbers do say he's been better defensively, but I went and looked up his defensive real plus minus, which in the past has been the worst in the league, and he's improved this year, but to sixth worst in the league, ahead of LaMelo Ball, Tremont Waters, who barely plays, James Harden, the aforementioned Zach LaVine, and Russell Westbrook. So some illustrious company there for Trae Young at the bottom of the defensive standings. Yeah, well.
But they aren't a bad defensive team with him on the floor, and that's all that matters, because he's a guy who, if you got him on the floor and some decent talent around him, you will have a really damn good offense. So if
And the three guys at the bottom, James Harden, Zach LaVine, and Russell Westbrook, are on teams that are absolute dumpster fires when their teams are on the court. So,
yeah, you haven't heard Westbrook's name brought up on the All-Star.
And he will not be in the All-Star discussion for anyone, I don't believe, certainly not for me.
And not that Harden's been a stopper in Brooklyn, but he's at least broken a sweat on that end of the floor, which he did not do during his brief Rocket stint to start this season.
Well, they've collectively barely broken a sweat on the court, so defensively. So he's among like company.
I'll tell you one thing, man. When they have it humming offensively, it is something to see.
Well, they can certainly score. There's no question about that. The only question is, are they going to be able to stop the other team from scoring enough to win in the playoffs? That's the only question with them.
I know that's not under debate, but I mean, a machine is almost understating it. A lot of times they just make it look so easy. And, you know, you can play really good defense on them. Like, you can rotate, you can make the correct decisions, and it just doesn't matter. It's just, you know, they have so much firepower. And, like, you know, we're going to talk about the Clippers in a minute. But when they actually have it going from the outside, like they did against the Clippers in their big win on Tuesday night, you know, it's a miracle that teams can stay in it. But it's not a miracle because they totally lay down on the other end. So it would be a shame if Domantas Sabonis does not make it, because I think the Pacers have been really good this year, and he has been really strong. I know he made it last year. The Pacers deserve to have a representative. By the way, he's a low-profile player playing in a small market, so it's probably not getting recognized. But, you know, Jeremy Lamb is coming off of a ACL tear. I don't remember a guy coming back from an ACL, especially mid-season. Oh,
and not just an ACL. I mean, he tore he messed a bunch of stuff up in his knee. That was a pretty gruesome injury last year.
Yeah, and so he doesn't get the benefit of coming back in and starting at the same speed as everybody like an offseason. He comes back in mid-season, and the Pacers are, you know, down. You know, they've got injured players, and you know the unfortunate situation with Caris LeVert. And Jeremy Lamb has been a huge offensive difference maker for them coming in. He's putting up some terrific numbers since he's come back, shooting over 50% from the field. The exact inverse of what we normally see from a guy who comes back from an ACL, what you normally really start slow. He's played 8 games, 51% from the field, 47% on threes. Now, do I think it's going to last? No, he's a career 33% three-point shooter, 34%, I guess he's bumped up now from this year. That's on 5 a game. So, it would be a shame if Sabonis didn't make it, and I suspect that the coaches will reward a team that's played pretty well, and I think Sabonis has a good chance of eking in there. The other guy is, and I don't see how he can make it, because they've been such a disappointment, but Nikola Vucevic in Orlando has had an excellent season, and I don't see how he fits on there.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, he's another guy, right? Like he's one of these 10 or 11 guys in that mix for one spot, right? And like he's had a great year, but like, you know, if a guy with like Ben Simmons was an All NBA player last year, he's not really even in the discussion, right? So like it's when you have literally one spot maybe available, and that's if Kyrie, and you know, that's assuming like Kyrie is not a lock. Like if you make him a lock, like, okay, then it's Nick Vucevic versus Sabonis or Bam Adebayo. Like he's just, those guys he's not going to get in over those guys almost certainly. You wouldn't think, no matter how good he's been.
23 points a game, career high, averaging 11 rebounds a game, averaging 4 assists a game, averaging 1 steal a game, shooting 43% on threes, on 6 threes a game. Those are awesome numbers, but it's the Magic, and you know, just doesn't get a lot of attention. And they're not underachieving. They're just not achieving, really. And you know, they've had injuries. You know, a couple of guys out for the year. So I'm not sure.
Makes a big difference in the East All Stars when James Harden and Kevin Durant are in the mix.
I know it really does.
And Jaylen Brown becoming an All NBA.
We didn't even talk about that. I doubt the fans. You don't think the fans reward him with a starting because he's just sort of new. But I'll bet if he doesn't get a starting spot, that he's a unanimous pick by the coaches.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if he's not. And look, he plays for a huge market team, right? I mean, he's going to get a lot of votes. So I mean, he certainly got a chance to start. I think he probably won't, but he's got a shot.
I think the Nets are sweeping the backcourt positions. I think Harden and Kyrie are getting those votes.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
Even with regardless of why he was away from the team, even with all the issues that he's had, Kyrie is an incredibly popular player. He's just extremely popular with fans, and you know, I don't think some of his statements and things actually.
Yeah, no, it certainly won't be at all surprising if he gets voted as a starter, and he deserves to make, assuming he stays healthy, he deserves to make the team anyway. So ultimately, it doesn't matter.
Do you follow him on Instagram?
I do follow Kyrie on Instagram.
Good. I'm sure he appreciates that.
I'm sure he does.
Meanwhile, your Instagram got hacked. Did anything?
Listen, really, I'm back in business, baby.
Okay, but did anything like really bad happen during the hacking?
No, somebody just like spammed a whole bunch of people and tried to pull the same situation. I mean, I still have near the fewest followers of any verified account, but I went from like 600 something to 18, which was a huge blow to my ego.
You had 18 total?
Well, I'm back up. I am back into at least the triple digits now, despite Bontemps. Get this. No follow back from Wendy. No follow back from Wendy.
I have an account, but I'm not on it.
Alleged a leading hoop collector.
Right. Yeah. If we want to talk about team players here, okay, I think we're getting more of the Cavaliers version of Kyrie out of Windy than we are the happy-go-lucky best buddies in Brooklyn version.
Anything that's been posted on Instagram in the last 7 or 8 months on my account has been posted by Andrew Hahn, and I'm not kidding. He has my password.
Oh. Look at this big shot.
I want it on the,
Boy, you're delegating. I mean, that's when you really have made it. When you get to delegate to one of our bosses.
You've got your own podcast your and your boss. Account. You got your own podcast and your boss is posting on your Instagram.
I got to go eat some of once this COVID stuff's over, I got to treat Han to some of those hipster LA restaurants. I know that's how you get in with them. You got to bring those hipster restaurants.
Yeah, he took us to some. The last time we all went out to dinner together, remember we went to some Korean barbecue place out there?
Uh-huh.
He like had to make some reservation like weeks in advance to get us in or something like that. It was a Mexican place. The year before it was a Korean
place. Yes. Yeah, so I was going to say, the last time we were all together for dinner was at that Mexican place. That's
right. And then I went to another dinner afterwards because I didn't want to see things on that menu. All right. So I do think I already have noticed now that the All-Star game is going to happen that I do see people who are thinking certain guys are going to be All-Stars. And, you know, once you break down the numbers as Bontemps did, there's going to be some disappointed folks because I think especially in the Eastern Conference. So,
yeah, like I said, you add two All-NBA players and you know, Jalen jumping up to that level. That's three guys that were not in the mix a year ago that are now, right? So
Did Tatum make the All-Star team last year? I can't
remember.
Yes. Okay. So he's a mainstay. Yes. So if there's one Pacer who makes it, is it Brogdon or Sabonis?
I think you could legit argue either way. They've both been awesome. I think Sabonis made it last year, and there's a bunch of guards in the East. I suspect that Sabonis is the guy who makes it, but I don't think you could go wrong either way. Brogdon's been awesome, so either one is good.
Beal didn't make it last year, but should have, and is a lock to make it this year. Yeah. Tobias Harris having a spectacular season. Just a numbers game, right there, right?
I didn't hear you. Oh, Tobias Harris. Yeah. I mean, he's been really good. But again, like, you know, it kind of goes back to the Utah point that Tim made, right? He's probably not making it over Ben Simmons. And if Ben Simmons isn't making it, I don't see Tobias making it, despite how well Tobias has played. Tobias has been great, but it's just going to be hard.
Yeah. And a guy who made it last year who hasn't even been mentioned is Siakam, right? Has had a disappointing
game. I don't see him making it. I mean, Kyle Lowry's made it 6-7 years in a row, and he's played pretty well this year again also, but they've underachieved a bit, and I don't think he's even really that close. You know, Fred VanVleet had 54 points last night and he's averaging 20 a game. I don't think he's that close. I mean, it's not the old Eastern Conference All-Stars, you know, just with the amount of talent that's out in the East. I mean, it's just a much different calculus.
And we didn't bring up Gordon Hayward, who's
been awesome. He's been awesome too.
And, you know, one of the reasons why he went to Charlotte was to try to get back into that, you know, he was Western Conference All-Star his last year in Utah. He never made it in Boston for various reasons, injuries being the primary one. Let's look at his numbers. 23 points, that's a career high.
Yeah, shooting 50% from the field, shooting 40% from three, averaging a few assists a game. They've been pretty good. Like he's been awesome. But again, it's just like, you know.
Hey, do they got to get Hayward in there for ratings reasons? Who doesn't want to tune in for him?
it's just there's a lot of guys with good candidacies. I mean, I actually think the Eastern Conference roster after the, you know, trying to pick the final spot or two, actually, I think you make a pretty good case. It's tougher than the West. You know, at the end of the day, there's a bunch of good players that aren't going to make it.
Well, it would not surprise me if no Houston Rockets made it after they've had two guys on the team for.
Yeah. Again, Wood is a legit candidate. You know, we'll see what they, I mean, if they keep on, who has the longest winning streak in the league right now?
Is it the Houston Rockets?
The mighty Houston Rockets.
Well, that's what I was making a pivot.
Like Yao Ming in the post.
Who do they play tonight, McMahon?
The not so mighty Oklahoma City Thunder.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't guarantee anything with them. They sneak up on people. But so they're going for seven in a row tonight. And they've crawled up. They've crawled up to ninth. Although it's sort of a they're thousandths of a point ahead of Golden State and San Antonio, and you know, they're a game and a half ahead of Sacramento. And if you give them a game and a half, they're only a game and a half out of fourth. So it's still pretty tight. But as you mentioned, six in a row. Defensively, they've played really well. They've won 7 out of 10 overall. In addition to Christian Wood putting up big numbers, what's going on in Houston that has turned things around and actually got them, the Rockets, getting a bit chesty from what I can see out there?
Chesty. I love that. Look, they're obviously, there are a bunch of dudes who feel like they've got a lot to prove. They've got a huge chip on their shoulder. It helps that they all actually want to be there, or if PJ Tucker doesn't necessarily want to be there, he's at least bought in, which clearly, look, you know, I mean, the hard thing was a huge black cloud. We all understand that. We don't need to delve into that. But what they've got now is a bunch of dudes who play hard, play unselfishly. I think Steven Silas, if we're going to talk about, you know, quarter point of the season, coach of the year candidates, he's got to be high on
that. Done a really, really great job.
Yeah, for all the crap that he handled, and even since Harden's been gone, you know, Wall missed a stretch of games. You know, Oladipo, they're obviously being very careful with sitting him some. Wood even missed some games when Cousins stepped into the starting lineup. You know, he put up big numbers for him, and then they've just, like, give Rafael Stone credit, man. He's found, like, you know, Jayshon Tate is a dude he found playing in Australia, who, you know, he's an undrafted rookie that's been plugged in their starting lineup and produces for him. Eric Gordon is playing phenomenal ball on both ends of the floor. You know, he got that extension last year and it looked like a horrible contract. He was injured. He had the midseason knee surgery. He was never right last year. It was this funky, like, you know, situation where he was basically watching Harden and Russ take turns. But Gordon has been, you know, playing out of his mind. And so they've got a lot of guys who feel like they've got a ton to prove. They're playing their asses off. You know, it's not been the most difficult stretch of schedule. That's certainly part of it. But, you know, there's just kind of a really good vibe, which obviously is the total opposite of what it was to start the season for them.
By the way, for coach of the year for the first quarter, I'm going to go with Taylor Jenkins, who didn't have Jaren Jackson and didn't have John Morant for a big stretch, and they're 9-7. Also had a COVID shutdown. So.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves mention. Quinn Snyder was coach of the Western Conference Coach of the Months, yeah, which is
for sure.
Yeah, Doc Rivers was Eastern Conference Coach of the Months, and then
you say a month because it includes December and January,
right? Which, yeah. I don't get that. Why did you, whatever? I guess December was a little. I'm sorry. I'm thinking normal school. Right. And then
they do that. They do that every year too. They always say October, November.
Right. Normal school. And then the other guy who I think absolutely deserves mention in that group is JB Bickerstaff. When you look at how competitive the Cavaliers have been, you know, when he took over a team that was in complete disarray, they were competitive then the last season.
Well, they were 30th in defense the last 2 years, and I don't know where they are at this moment, but at the start of the week, I think they were 8th or 9th.
Yeah, they're 7th right now, and you're seeing development in some of the young players there. Without Kevin Love, they're, you know, still right.
Well, that probably
right
helps
there.
Their defense, quite frankly.
Okay, but still, they're 10-11 without the guy who makes the most money on the team.
That's
so
true.
That's just my short list of guys I think are deserving coach of the year candidates.
But Houston, do you think that they can, with this? I mean, the other thing, they have choices to make about whether or not they're going to trade off pieces. We talked about this earlier in the week, but obviously PJ Tucker's name has been out there. Daniel House's name has been out there. And while they haven't floated Victor Oladipo, that is an option for them to do before the deadline.
Right.
Victor, the other night, you know, and I like Victor. I have nothing bad to say about him, but, you know, he's saying all the teams quit on me. You know, he's kind of, you know.
Yeah, the Indiana thing wasn't, you know, whatever. Like, it was very strange situation.
The Thunder traded him for Paul George. I don't think that's an insult.
Yeah.
You know. The Magic traded him for Serge Ibaka because they didn't want to pay him. And that was, now that's a fair point. You can say it was a disaster trade all around for Orlando, and they traded Serge within a year up to Toronto for Terrence Ross and I think a first round pick. So that's a fair point. But Bontemps, do you think Houston can maintain this? And, you know, do you think that they hold on to these guys now that they were thinking about with trading because they might have something?
I would assume McMahon would probably have a better sense of this than me, but I would assume it wouldn't change their thinking between now and the deadline. I think they were probably going to wait anyway and do something, but I suspect if they could get a good deal for Victor Oladipo or PJ Tucker or any of these other guys, I think they would still do something by the deadline. But yeah, look, I mean, if they don't trade those guys, I mean, they have a decent team. Like you're going to go through the roster. Like John Wall, when, you know, health is an issue, but when John Wall's healthy, he's a solid point guard. Victor Oladipo is a good two guard. Christian Wood has been a good center. PJ Tucker is solid, right? Daniel House is a solid defensive wing.
Christian Wood has been damn good.
He's been really good. Like they have a decent amount of talent, and like
they have depth. They haven't had Sterling Brown, Nawab off the bench. Both those guys have played well. You know, they've got ten guys in the rotation that can play, which has not been the case in the past.
No question. And if you look at the West, right, I would say there's, you know, five teams you look at that are definite playoff teams barring catastrophic injury in Utah, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Nuggets, and the Suns. And then after that, you've got Portland, Houston, Dallas, Golden State, San Antonio, New Orleans. Like, there's no reason that Houston can't be in the mix with those teams, and that's like 6-12 in the West. Right.
Especially when you're talking about a playoff team. Right, 10 teams. Here's what I would say about the Rockets in terms of the trade market. I still anticipate that PJ Tucker gets moved. And that's simply because this is fun for the Rockets. Yes, this is, you know, there's a refreshed vibe in the organization and they're really enjoying being competitive and proving people wrong right now. But it's not about this season for the Rockets. This is about laying a cultural foundation. But, you know, obviously when you make the moves that they've made and gotten all the picks, it's about building for the future. And PJ Tucker's not going to be part of their future. They had extension discussions. Those broke down. Those extension discussions happened when they were still hoping to be able to keep Harden on board. Obviously he's gone. And there will be interest in PJ Tucker from, you know, he's a plug and play guy for a bunch of contenders. I don't think they'll be able to squeeze a first round pick out of him. You know, maybe they can, maybe it's just multiple seconds, whatever it is. I think he's moved, and they've got some young guys in particular, Tate, who I think can take a big part of that role. Oladipo, the kind of the sense that I get is the Rockets are really kind of in an evaluation mode on him.
That's what Stone said.
Yeah. And it's a mutual. Yeah. Stone said it, you know, he hopes it's a great marriage, but yeah. Right. So, I think it's a two-way evaluation process, right? Because Oladipo in this market is going to have options. I think we all understand that. And so I think they've got a little over a month and a half left before the deadline. And by that time, they'll probably have a pretty good sense of whether this is a guy they want to pay a bunch of money in the offseason, or if it's a guy they would rather flip for another asset or two.
Yeah, well, Houston's become one of the most interesting teams in the league. I don't know how long it'll remain that way, but they're certainly worth monitoring.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
There was an important game that happened on Tuesday night. It came down to the last seconds. Brooklyn Clippers. Paul George complained after the game about foul calls and stuff, but you know, this was a game that, you know, was needed for Brooklyn, especially after they lost that game to the Wizards. It was at the end of a long road trip for I guess they have one more game left on this road trip. The Clippers, they have a right at the near the end of a 7-game road trip. You know, when watching the end of that game, which, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's ultimately it's a game in the first week of February. It certainly doesn't define anything. You know, the Nets just put up, you know, they were doing their Nets thing. I mean, they shot 57% as a team. Kyrie had 39, with 6 of 8 on threes. But then again, you could flip it. I'll step in for Bontemps before he says anything. They shoot 57% at home and they win by 4. You know, that's
look,
just
say what you want. I promise you this. If you tune in to watch the Nets play, you will be entertained.
Oh, they're the most entertaining team in the league, bar none. Every game is going to be at least 125 to 120, and it's often going to be 145 to 140. And well, the end of the game is going to be
Lawler's
insane.
Law, so. Lawler's Law does not apply to the Nets.
Lawler's
okay,
Law.
That thing has been inflated.
That gets eclipsed in the third quarter.
Yeah.
The other night against Washington, it was 108-101 after three.
Yeah, it's first to 125, maybe.
Maybe.
So, but anyway, watching the end of this game, Bontemps, you something struck you, and what was it?
Yeah, the Clippers are the same team they were in the playoffs against Denver in particular, in that when they get down the stretch of these games, their offense devolves to a bunch of standing around until somebody shoots the ball. And the reason for that is, like in the playoffs, they don't have a point guard to get them into an offense, into like run an offense. And Paul George isn't really that guy. Kawhi Leonard isn't really that guy. Patrick Beverley, when he's healthy, he didn't play. He isn't that guy. Reggie Jackson was playing in that game in the fourth quarter. He definitely isn't that guy.
No, he's like they, not.
I mean, he was a disaster at the end of that game. I mean,
Beverley's out with a knee injury.
Yeah, I have thought since that playoff run and the way it ended against Denver that for as good as the Clippers are and as talented as they are, they desperately are in need of a point guard who can run an offense and get them into stuff down the stretch of games. Because as we were just talking about, the Nets are a train wreck on defense. But if you're going to just stand around and then shoot a jumper with 5 seconds on the shot clock, even the Nets can guard that. Like if you're actually running stuff, you're going to get buckets. And if you try to get into some ISO back and forth game with the Nets, like, yeah, the Nets are going to beat you, which is what happened down the stretch of that game.
Some of the best ISO players in the history of the game.
Right, exactly. So
I would argue they have
probably
three of the greatest ISO players in the history of the game.
Yeah, I don't think that's much of an argument.
Like, legitimately, pretty three simple. Probably of the top 10 or 15.
And for sure.
Two of the top five, I would say.
Yeah, at least. I mean, they're all terrific. So, you know, but look, that was my takeaway watching that game. It was less about the Nets and more just that if I'm the Clippers between now and the deadline in late March, I'm doing everything I can to get a point guard that can run an offense for me. I'm calling Minnesota. I'm trying to get Ricky Rubio. I'm trying to get some. And obviously, Rubio hasn't been great for Minnesota this year, but they don't have any first round picks, so they'd have to throw in a bunch of seconds or something. But like, for them to be a championship team, they need to get some upgrade on that point guard spot because they just don't. I don't think Beverley is that guy for them, and I just think they need somebody who can get them into offensive sets late in games against, you know, this high level teams if they're gonna, you know, be able to overcome the issues that they had last year.
Yeah, I mean, they have had a really good season to this point, and they have been more focused, played with more of a purpose than they did a year ago. But, you know, and they've won games by having Kawhi and Paul George be their sort of creator down the stretch. Batum has done some of it. In this particular case, you know, in this game last night, you saw it. You could see where they were wheezing a little bit. And, you know, they were, you know, I think in the last 2 minutes, they ended up with, I think, two or three possessions where they ended up with Nick Batum shooting threes.
I tell you what, why don't they just have, give Chauncey Billups a jersey He's already on the bench. Okay, just give him a jersey, and he only plays like the last 5 minutes. You can load management him. He's only the guy who plays the last 5 minutes of close games. I think Chauncey still has enough in his legs to get it done.
You know, the thing about it is that, like, that's exactly the time. I mean, Chauncey Billups is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. But, like, that vintage of guard is what they need. They don't
That's why I think Rubio would be good for them. I mean, Rubio is flawed, but, like, he's going to be able to get them into offensive sets and get them running. He'll pick the pace up, too. Like, when they struggle, they tend to kind of get into these, you know, walk it up and stand in the half court and stand. Like, when they're moving around, they're really good. When they get, you know, stationary, that's when they struggle. So, and he's a guy that's just like, he fits that bill and he's available. And again, like, the Clippers aren't exactly overflowing with trade assets too. So, like, you know, they're limited by the hard cap. They're limited by the lack of picks. I mean, they're going to have to be creative to try to find a way to fix that. But I just think it's something they need to try to do over the next couple of months here.
I thought for sure they were going to address that in the off season. And I think they sniffed around it, but they really didn't. You know, they made
there was Rondo rumors with them.
Yeah. Well, again, Rondo, you know, not regular season Rondo, but playoff Rondo would be amazing.
I know one championship point guard who will be available in late March. Mi amigo, Jose Juan Barea, playing with the Estudiantes right now.
I'm telling you.
That was an impassioned defense you had on the low post to get him back on the match.
I'm telling you what, if Barea lands with a contender, Bill Duffy's his agent. I'm going to have to negotiate with Bill. I want 1%. I want 1% of the minimum. But I'm serious. If you talk about a guy who, look, he ain't going to play a lot of minutes, but if you talk about a guy who can run a freaking offense, I mean, he can run some pick and roll, can get you in your sets, can run your offense.
I love JJ, but I don't think JJ is necessarily the solution. I think, to your point, JJ would be good to be back in Dallas to help them out, I think, with their situation. But I don't know if he's helping the Clippers.
Yeah.
The guy they need back in Dallas is Seth Curry.
Yeah. That's I don't know if you guys want to get into this or not, but
I don't.
Okay, good. We won't.
Right time. Right time. But
well, thanks, right. Wendy. And the Hoop Collective will just shut up now then.
That's right. You're collectively muzzled. A reminder that the new 30 for 30 airs on Thursday, the day this podcast comes out. And it's about Al Davis and the Raiders. And if you love that film, which I'm sure you will, Super Bowl week leading up to it, all kinds of excitement. You'll want to listen to more about it. So please check out Jalen and Jacoby, The After Show, wherever you get your podcast or where you're listening to this podcast right now. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Tim Bontemps. Thank you to Tim McMahon. Everybody have a good weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll be back with you next week.
Adios, amigos.